Welcome to iRun Radio. Coming up, how to run safely when the temperature plummets.
There are inherent risks in running in the cold. The two big ones being hypothermia, and the second one being frostbite. And really, one needs to be very cognizant of what they're doing when they lead into cold weather running, just like we would when we're heading into hot weather running. When it's 30 plus degrees and high humidex, we tend to be a little more cautious about what we're going to do there. It can be done safely, as can cold weather running.
A member of the RCMP who runs for both physical and mental health.
You run because you want to keep a healthy body and a healthy mind, right? So it's always been about that for me. And I actually crave it. I actually crave it when it's been a while and I haven't gone out, or it's been a couple of days and work's been busy and this and that. It's like an edgy craving that I have and I need to go.
And are women really less likely to quit than men?
It's less about our biology and it's more about our kinship. Every kind of theory that the author came up with was really, you know, it really played into these kind of gender roles that we see in sports. And I think it's really important that we, start like supporting women in a different way.
On this edition of iRun Radio, some great tips on how to protect yourself when the temperature drops. A member of the RCMP who runs half marathons and marathons, but also just for the benefits to her health. And some great insights arising out of a New York Times article that claimed women were less likely to quit than men in difficult circumstances. Let's get things started now with the editor and general manager of iRun, Ben Kaplan. Hello, Ben.
Hey there.
How are you?
I can't complain. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, and look, you've had an interesting January. You've been running, of course, but you've also been doing something else a little bit different, right?
Well, that's right. I've been one of the many, or one of the vocal few, who are doing a dry January and embarking on that. And I tell you, it's been an interesting ride. I've enjoyed it very much. I don't know 100%. I would say I've enjoyed it very much, but
yeah.
I would say it has resonated with me. It's been eye opening.
Well, I've been right along there with you. I'm having a dry January as well, but I have every month is dry for me.
Had dry December, dry November. Yeah, that's right. So it's a little less,
a little less of a challenge. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me what's been different for you.
Well, it's interesting because how much of this stuff is habit forming, and how much of it I've just come to associate that when I finish certain things, there's a reward at the end of them for me.
Right, like a beer or a glass of wine, basically.
Yeah, that I finished, especially, I don't know, I don't want this to sound awful, but in certain days when I know I have marathon schlepping of the kids,
right?
And that when I finish these tasks, and the kids, and it's not even when they're asleep, it's before that, but it's sort of in their come down, cool out time when I've done it. I've gotten them home, we finished our thing, and it's like at that bewitching hour, call it 7:15 or something like that, where a sip of something I've come to enjoy,
sort
of separates my day from the night, and I am now done. And to remove that and to be conscious of it, I feel very much like I'm paying attention to it. And, we had friends over last weekend and, the guy brought a six pack and the football was on and it's a part of my social circle. And with the runs, I tell you, Wednesday nights when I finish my training and I make it to my house, the body does sort of, or my body does, or my mind has come to associate, a beer after the run at night.
Yeah.
So,
what do you conclude from all of this?
I don't know, but I feel like it's definitely sexual. I certainly conclude that it is something I need to acknowledge because it has been a difficult's the wrong word for it.
But it's noticeable, right?
Yes, it's significant.
Yeah.
It's become, And it's become this thing. And like my wife's birthday is at the end of the month. And it's like, okay, I mean, are you going to go have dinner with her? We have a sitter and we're going to sit down. And, you know, where it'd be normal that we would have wine together and I'm going to have a tonic water. And is that going to, you know, and you know, it's just, I don't know. It's interesting. So yeah. I definitely advise it, because anything that sort of makes you look in the mirror and look at your lifestyle and look at how you live when you're not, you know, consciously making decisions, just what you do. But I can't say like I'm sleeping better or I've lost 5 pounds or I'm
sure
I've suddenly.
Well, it's only been a few weeks, right? But it's interesting that the Canada Food Guide, the new version of the Canada Food Guide, came out this week, and it basically said drink less if you can and if you want to. That's healthier. And it also said, you know what, you should probably just be drinking water, except for if you're doing something for fun or for pleasure. But there really isn't anything else you need to drink other than water to be healthy.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's kind of interesting to me, because that's basically all I drink is water. I don't drink pop. I used to. I don't drink fruit juice. I used to. And you know what? I don't miss all that other stuff. And that's not, I'm not some Puritan, because I still eat lots of sweets. I love cookies. I love ice cream. I love cake. So I have my things that I go to. It's just, I don't miss the stuff that I used to drink, the calories I used to get from beverages. I just drink water for the most part.
It's funny, because I do like, especially when I have my long, I mean, you know, so much of the stuff is habit or whatever you think. You know, we've gotten into that in the past, like what does what and what's just in your head. Because I do like a glass of orange juice to top me out before I go out in the morning on a run, you know, maybe 25 minutes before I go. That in my mind's eye, like I get that glass of orange juice, and that's like my last step of the process of getting me out for my run.
Right. Interesting. So I wanted to get your reaction to a post by Lindsay Van Jean, who is going to be on the show with us today, about an article in the New York Times about how men quit and women don't when it comes to tough times. And she's gotten a lot of reaction to that.
Yeah, and I really like that story, because it's like women, I think the data says that if everything is in a perfect condition, that the men are more apt to finish at a greater
right.
number. But the more difficult the thing gets, the more likely it is that the women are going to finish in a higher percentage than the men. And some of that is that, you know, some of it is biology. Some of it is that what they've done, having to fight to replace to get on the line.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of different reasons. And, you know, it's just fascinating. And it's also really inspiring. I mean, that's very
yeah.
cool.
We have a lot of great stuff coming up on the show today, and looking forward to chatting with you again next week. Good luck with the rest of your dry January.
Good luck with you in February, March, April, May, and June.
Thanks a lot, Ben. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, my friend.
Ben Kaplan, iRun's editor and general manager. Coming up next, how to run safely and warmly in frigid temperatures. iRun Radio is brought to you in part by New Balance Canada. New Balance is a proud sponsor of the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon, fitting elite Olympic marathoners like Reed Coolset, and also making shoes that are ideal for you. Over the past couple of weeks, we've had some frigid temperatures in many parts of Canada, and that raises questions about how to stay safe when you're running outside. We're joined by Dr. Lowell Grebe, a runner who is the medical director of Sport Lab in Huntsville, Ontario. Lowell, thanks for joining us once again.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for having me.
And congratulations to you and your wife, Catherine. Just a few weeks ago, you had a child. This is very
yes,
exciting.
We did, a baby girl.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I think we've already got her in marathon training, though.
Well, that would not surprise me, Lowell, because, of course, we should remind people of the story. Catherine's been on the show as well, and the two of you met through running, and you got married the day after a half marathon, I think, if I'm remembering correctly.
We got married the day after the Victoria Marathon.
Okay, not a half marathon, then, a marathon.
A marathon,
okay.
Yes. It was a whole family event.
Yeah. So you ran the race together, and then the next day you got married.
You are absolutely correct.
And embarked on the greatest marathon of all.
Yes.
The greatest long-distance event in in human life, marriage.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The 24/7, 365 marathon.
Yeah. The endurance challenge of all endurance challenges. Yeah.
Yes.
So that's great. Well, I'm sure it will be a great ride for you and your young family. So all the best to you. So how has that impacted on your running? I'm sure Catherine's not running again as much as I imagine she's looking forward to it.
She's very much looking forward to it. The run stroller is ready to roll, and we run with one of our dogs as well. So it's now trying to figure out how we're going to attach a dog to the run stroller to Catherine.
Okay.
All at the same time.
Get the whole family out together.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And now it's been extremely cold, so we should talk a little bit about that. I know you've been talking to your clients about tips for cold weather running. Where you
yes.
are, where I am, it's been frigid, and to a point where it does raise the question, I think, of whether it is safe and appropriate to go outside. I'm a year-round runner, and I will run in any weather. I have mentioned
yes.
recently, of course, that I got a treadmill about a year ago. And so I do some, I do more of my running on a treadmill than I used to in the winter, but I still run outside when it's minus 15 and minus 20 and even minus 30. But some of the temperatures this week, especially with the wind chill, have stretched into the area of, you have to ask the question of whether it's still a good idea.
Yeah, it becomes minus 40 or minus 45 with a wind chill. And there are inherent risks in running in the cold. The two big ones being hypothermia, and the second one being frostbite. And really, one needs to be very cognizant of what they're doing, when they lead into cold weather running. Just like we would when we're heading into hot weather running, when it's 30 plus degrees and high humidex, we tend to be a little more cautious about what we're going to do there. It can be done safely. As can cold weather running.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I think in hot weather running, our bodies are more likely to tell us very quickly if it's getting dangerous because we start to feel uncomfortable and it becomes hard to run. With cold mm-hmm. weather running, it's not the physical movement that is affected by the temperature. It's other things where the warning signs may not be as apparent, right?
Yeah, and they might come on a little more slowly as well, right? Like
yeah.
it's one of the key symptoms of hypothermia is shivering. Well, anything under 0 or 2 degrees even,
yeah.
You're going to shiver probably at some point in time in your run.
I'm shivering now, and I'm inside.
Just thinking about the minus 30
yeah.
outside, yes.
Yeah.
But there's definitely... the one thing that people need to be cognizant of is planning their runs. You wouldn't want to necessarily go and in early marathon training. A lot of us are training early in the year in this cold weather for some of the early spring events. And if you're doing a big, you know, training run at 20 plus kilometers, you don't necessarily want to do a 20 plus kilometer loop. And if there's an ankle sprain or the cold does start catching up on you, you want to have an out. You want to be able to get back to a warm location before you are exposed even more.
Yeah, that's a great point. And in fact, when I do cold weather runs, long runs, I do a couple of things. One is that I'll often run with a friend who sometimes is not running as far as I am, but that means that I'm going to make a pit stop at his house, pick him up, and that gives me an opportunity. He lives not far from me, so it means I'm doing a short loop coming back. Then I'm at his house, and if I need to go inside for a minute or two, I can. If something's come up, I can address it. I also try to if I'm running by myself, do loops that sort of start and end at my house. If I'd have to do 25K, I'll do 5K loops. They don't all have to be the same, but at least I'm getting back within the vicinity of my house every so often. And the other thing I'll do is I'll run down, you know, I'll try to stay close to a commercial strip where if you run down a street that's got a lot of restaurants and stores and other things that happen to be open, at least if something goes wrong, you can go indoors and you can ask for help. If you're running out on some, you know, country road somewhere, you don't have a lot of options and you might just end up walking a long way to get back, and that's where it could get dangerous.
You are bang on. Now, unfortunately, I don't have long stretches of well-populated streets where I'm running. So what we typically recommend and what I do is if I'm going out on a longer run, whether it's an out and back or short loops, somebody always knows where I am. So if I don't return back in a reasonable time, I've got a search party. And then, of course, we carry our mobile devices and cell phones with us everywhere we go. Yet, for some reason, some runners decide not to bring a communication device. And having that cell phone is going to be or could be important. You may not feel cold or cool while running once your body temperature rises and you put the right clothing on. But as a precaution, if something were to happen and you can't run anymore and you have a light sweat on and it's minus 25 or minus 30, you are going to get cold very quickly. And really, you're just preparing yourself for a circumstance that hopefully doesn't happen.
Yeah, and so it's always good to be cautious and prepared. Now, I want to talk about the physiology of cold weather running for a moment, because some people, particularly non-runners, will say, is it okay to be breathing in that cold air at a high rate because you're exercising and exerting yourself, or is that bad for your lungs? And my understanding is there's no evidence that you damage your lungs by breathing cold air, even if you're doing it at a faster rate because you're exercising. That, in fact, this is how we were designed, right? We were designed to warm up the air.
We are. That's why we have a nose. So it's a longer passageway for us to be able to breathe in and warm air. So breathing through your nose is going to be helpful in innately warming the air before it enters your lungs in the first place. There is, however, some evidence that suggests that cold air exposure can create almost an inflammatory response on the epithelium or the cells that line your breathing tracts, which is likely why those that have asthma, for instance, or other types of allergies can get some irritation in cold weather, whether it be a wheeze or an exacerbation of asthma. It could be because of this inflammatory response that is occurring because of the cold weather or cold air exposure. So those that have underlying conditions, respiratory conditions, should be that much more sensitive to training in the cold air.
Is there anything else we should be mindful of? Obviously, bundling up is important. You don't want to overdo it because then you're going to sweat more, and that could make you colder later on if you slow down a bit. So you got to dress right, not just overdress. Covering up, obviously. For me, it's a lot about making sure I've got extra layers on my hands and feet, because that's where I tend to. My body doesn't tend to get as cold as quickly, but my fingers and toes do.
And layering on hands or feet is as important as layering your torso or your legs. We're pretty good at throwing on a pair of long underwear or long top and then putting another layer over that and possibly an outer layer over that. But sometimes we forget that our hands and our feet are as exposed, if not more, exposed to the cold. Similarly, our face and our head, so tips of the ears, tips of the nose, the fringe just under your eye, the top of your cheeks, those are areas that can get frostbite pretty easily. So just having them covered or having the ability to have them covered is an appropriate measure. So even if it's one of those tube face/neck warmer/bandana style apparatus that you can buy all over the place, you can pull that up, you can pull it down around your neck, you can use it almost like a balaclava, and it's quite modifiable from that perspective. And then doubling up on gloves, a thin underlayer, and then an overlayer glove. No matter what the clothing, though, there's a trick to layering that is of super importance. So many of us have double pane or triple pane windows in our house, and each pane has a gap of air in between the pane of glass. The glass is not just laminated on top of one another. And that thin layer of air is what is creating the gradient between cold and warm. And that's acting as an insulator between the cold and the warm. Similarly, when you're putting on a layer of clothing, you don't want a layer and then the next layer being super tight and then the next layer being super tight. So spandex over spandex over spandex is probably not creating insulating capacity that you're looking for.
You need those pockets of air, basically.
You got it.
Yeah.
They're super important.
Wow.
Great tip. A thin mitt or a thin glove you could put on your hand, and then put a mitt over top that's not tight on your hand. So you've created that barrier of air between your hand, the mitt, and the over glove.
Wow, that's a great tip. Lowell, great to talk to you, and this is really good advice. I really appreciate you joining us today. Once again, congratulations on the birth of your daughter. Say hi to Catherine, and we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate it. Look forward to chatting again.
That's Dr. Lowell Grebe of Sport Lab in Huntsville, Ontario. Coming up next, a member of the RCMP who did Boston last year and will be running in New York this fall. iRun Radio is brought to you in part by New Balance Canada. New Balance is a proud sponsor of the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon, fitting elite Olympic marathoners like Reed Coolset and also making shoes that are ideal for you. Welcome back to iRun Radio. iRun Radio is on the air every Sunday morning on 1310 News in Ottawa. And you can also listen to the podcast and check out past editions of the show at irun.ca. Just click on radio. Our next guest fulfilled a long-standing goal by running the Boston Marathon last year. And now she's looking forward to running New York in the fall. Marie-Hélène Gravel, thank you for being with us on iRun Radio.
Thank you, Mark. It's an honor for me to chat with you.
So tell me a little bit about how you got into running, because I understand you ran in high school. Is that right?
I did, but at that time, it was mostly track and field. It's something that there was, you know, either sprinting involved or the long distances. And it, in the age group, 17, 18, nobody wanted to do the long distances because that was too much work at that age. And
nobody wants to run 20 kilometers when they're 17 or 18 years old.
No, and at that age, you just want to sprint. Otherwise, it's too difficult, and people were not interested in that. But I kind of, I took to it, and 18, 19, I remember coming home from school and going out in the evenings when it was dark in the winter nights, and none of my friends did that, and I'd go out for 30-40 minute runs, and that's how it kind of started. And but to be honest with you, and maybe we'll touch up on it too, but the actual long distances and the mental well-being for me, that started later in my adulthood, you know. But
so you came back to running at a certain point, is that right?
Yeah, exactly. And I've always been very active, and I know, you know, we're chatting about running, but I'm an outdoor enthusiast. So it's one of those things. I was raised in such a way that, you know, we did snowshoeing, we did cross country skiing, and we did this and we did that. And but running was sort of my thing, and I evolved and I matured and I took to the long distances, and none of my friends did, and I kind of just kept going, and it actually was something I kind of started doing well at, so I stuck with it. And today at 47, the meaning of it is so different. Like, it's like I could talk for hours on what it does and what it, you know, what it does for me.
So what does it do for you? We should mention you're a member of the RCMP as well, right? So fitness is important for your, I would assume that fitness is important for your job, but it's also important for your mental health, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. It's such a two-sided thing too. And it's, the mental health, I guess today, like to be fit and healthy and to feel strong is one thing, and but the benefits of just going out there, it's a single thing for me, and I run alone, and I don't, not to say that there's, you know, like I've been running along the canal on Sunday morning, every Sunday morning I'm out there in the summer months, and once in a while I'll you know, run with someone, but it's such it provides a clear mind for me, and oftentimes when I'm sitting on a fence about something or a big decision or a dilemma, or I'm going through some sort of life struggle, I'll go for a run, and you know, I might not finish my run with the answer, and I'll be honest, but there's clarity, there's a bit more sense of peace with what I'm struggling with, and it's such a reward to start a run and to finish it ahead in your head, you know, and just to be able to say, you know what, I've come to peace with this, and this is clearer for me. I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do, but at least it's clearer, and let's just forward ahead, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, and it doesn't need, like, running doesn't need to be justified or applied to some end or whatnot. It's, you run because you want to keep a healthy body and a healthy mind, right? So it's always been about that for me, and I actually crave it when it's been a while and I haven't gone out, or it's been a couple of days and work's been busy and this and that. It's like an edgy craving that I have and I need to go.
Yeah, I know that feeling. Yeah. And along the way, you've done numerous half marathons. You've done some marathons as well. You qualified for Boston at Ottawa Race Weekend. Tell us about that experience. I know that was a big goal of yours. What did it feel like when you accomplished it?
It was, like I said, when we were communicating a bit by email, it was one of those things that was, it's a moment I'll never forget. And to be honest with you, the Ottawa Race Weekend qualifier for me was the first time I was doing a marathon. I was a little worried about it just because of, I have a sciatica issue and misplaced vertebrae, and it kind of pinches the nerve and it shoots down my toes. And I know a lot of runners know about this too, and it's a common thing. And I wasn't sure about the 42K, and I know the half marathon is just the right length for me, right distance for me. Not, you know, I'm not stuck 1 week and not, you know, not feeling well and whatnot. It was the right distance for me. So the marathon was kind of like I had a big question mark there. But and having said that, I'm a very hard-headed, stubborn person, so it's a goal that I said to myself, you know what, you got to go do it. And so, yeah, Ottawa Race Weekend in 2014, I qualified, and I thought I've got to do this. And it was partly because of the Boston bombing, and it was always on my bucket list. But when the bombings occurred, I just said, you got to do it, like go, like there's no reason why you can't this year. And so I did, and I did a 3:29 or something like that, 3:30, and then ran Boston the next year. So, and that, I will never forget the experience. Although the conditions were awful, it was something else.
Let's talk about that, because I was there that day too. That was my Boston Marathon debut.
It was.
Took me a lot longer to qualify than it did
You know what, Mark? I read your story and I read your description of the entire experience, and the words don't suffice. It's just one of those things. And I remember that Heartbreak Hill, and I thought, you know what? And you go through, you're struggling against yourself. You're struggling against the bitter cold. My calf had seized, and I said to my, I was almost in tears. My hands were frozen, and I remember my lips were blue when I crossed the finish line. And I thought to myself, I can't continue this. I can't do this. And it became a mind over matter, and it became, for me, again, it's for me, no pain, no gain type thing approach. And I had my grandmother's necklace around my neck, which I always have around my neck when I run races and organize races. And I kind of held on to everything that I could, and I just, man, it was the cold that kind of killed me that day a bit. I wasn't dressed warm enough, and then when I think of the last 5-6 Ks, people were kind of following me, and they were, oh my God, she's slowing down. And this, you know, after talking to them after, they're, I hope everything's okay and this and that. I was kind of scaling back a little bit when they were following me with their watches and their iPhones and whatnot. And I thought I wasn't going to do it. I thought I wasn't, because of the cold and the conditions. And then the crowd just, when you turn a certain corner, I forget that corner of the street when you're coming down the final stretch. There's no word. I was crying, I think, for the last kilometer, just because I had done it. I had ran Boston. So, and I have so many pictures, so many memories there. And you talk to people, are smiling at you at the end, and it's just, and now I'm driven for New York. So I'd like to see New York.
So now you've got another great experience coming up, because later this year you're doing the New York City Marathon.
Yes. And, exactly. And I haven't qualified for that one with the marathon, because my last marathon was Boston, but my half marathon times are pretty good, so I'm able to use one of the two last ones I've done in the last 4 months there to secure a spot there. Yeah, so I'm very happy, and it's one of those things. Boston was my last challenge, I would say, in terms of pushing myself beyond half marathons, because half marathons is my thing. That's what I do, and I've been placing well in my age category and whatnot. And it's funny, Mark, because I'm due for pushing more, and I'm due for hurting a little bit more and testing my limits and pushing my limits. And it's actually a need that I have, despite the toenails that I know are going to fall and that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So you have another opportunity to push yourself coming up. And it's a different experience from Boston, but it's just as thrilling at times. And it's a great event. You're going to enjoy that a great deal.
It is, eh?
Yeah.
That's good to know. And it's a great city. People have said,
oh yeah,
Between Boston and New York, yes. And they say you've got to run New York. Like, I know runners that said, oh my God, you have to do New York, you know? And I'm like, oh, I wonder why, you know, I got to do it. So, yeah.
Well, you'll have a great time. Marie-Hélène, it's great to chat with you. And I want to wish you the best of luck as you train this year and in the New York City Marathon later this year. Can't wait to hear how it goes for you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Mark, for having me, and best of luck to you, and keep on running on the sidewalks as well.
You too. Thanks, Marie-Hélène.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's Marie-Hélène Gravel of Ottawa. Coming up next, what can we learn from an article that claims women are less likely to quit in tough circumstances than men? iRun Radio is brought to you in part by New Balance Canada. New Balance is a proud sponsor of the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon, fitting elite Olympic marathoners like Reed Coolset, and also making shoes that are ideal for you. The New York Times published a recent article with the provocative headline, "Why Men Quit and Women Don't." It pointed out that in severe conditions, like last year's Boston Marathon, men are more likely to drop out than women. That provoked some very thoughtful comments in a blog posting at irun.ca by Lindsay Van Jean, who's a runner from Toronto, who's also part of the team that puts on the Divas Running Series. Lindsay, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
So what reaction did you have when you read this article in the New York Times?
Yeah, so the New York Times piece, obviously, it had a really tantalizing title. And I wanted to find out more about why this would be. So why men quit and women don't. What shocked me the most initially was that the title wasn't anywhere near true. And that actually women quit more than men in circumstances relating to the Boston Marathon specifically, and also under good weather conditions, where they push through and where men tend to drop out more is when the weather conditions or the conditions of the running are really bad. So that was the first thing that stuck out to me in terms of, like, you know, some of the things that may have not been, quite right about the article.
And so what did you think when you read it? Because it kind of explored the issue without really explaining it, right?
Yeah. So, it was a general overview to kind of unpack the answer to this. And the author really relied heavily on biology and physiology. So one of her main points was that women have, go through childbirth. So that must make them stronger and be able to fight through tough conditions.
Yeah, and that's always the one that comes up, right, is that you hear people not using scientific evidence, but just their own personal reaction is always, well, women are tough because they have babies and they carry children around for 9 months and they go through labor and delivering a child, which a man could never do, right? That's sort of the default.
Absolutely. And it doesn't take into account any sort of research done on how many women are running that have actually gone through childbirth. So to me, right away, it doesn't make sense. And the other part is fat composition. She talks about like women have a higher fat composition. And these are kind of general scientific clips that people kind of throw out there as a kind of a catch-all for why women are something. And I think it goes a lot deeper. And the author does touch on the kind of the tribalism of women and why women will reach out for help while men don't. But she really doesn't go too deep into that. And that's where I really started thinking about why is it that women don't quit while men do.
And so talk more about this tribalism aspect. What is that exactly? And how does it play into this discussion?
Sure. So I think especially in terms of sports, it hasn't been that long since women have been allowed to participate in all sorts of different sports, and there's still a lot of obstacles for women today. But in terms of the marathon especially, there was a time when, and not too long ago, when women weren't even allowed to run the Boston Marathon. And I think when there's that kind of, now we can do this attitude, and it's because we can, the idea of giving that up is hard. It's much harder for women. And so I think that, there's sort of a kinship there. And I also think that it lends the idea that, women or men are kind of have this, they have to be perceived as tough. And there's, an element of toxic masculinity where men are not reaching out for help. Whereas women, we can do that. And most of us do. Like, we can rely on our gendered group to pull us along. So I think that kind of outreach that happened during the race and what this article spoke to happens a lot more for women, and we will push through.
So does that mean that, first of all, women are more determined to prove something in those circumstances, and also they're more likely to help each other out and seek that help that will get them through?
I think that, for me, that's the way I would like to see it. And again, as I said in my article, like, I think it's really important for women to have opinions on why. And that's my opinion. I know that, like, I work really well with women. I'm an athletic person myself, and I love seeing women come together, play sports, and succeed and win. So I think it's important to recognize that, as our collective group, we will always have each other's back.
Now, one of the things I wonder about, too, is that I think there is in human nature a tendency to play against type. And to use a political example, I think somebody's done a study that shows that that left-leaning parties, liberal, progressive parties, are less likely to run deficits when they're in government than conservative parties, right-leaning parties, because they're worried about being criticized for that. They don't want to arm their critics by doing exactly what their critics expect them to do. And I wonder if there's an element of that too, that women are worried about being perceived as not being able to handle the tough conditions, so they're more determined to prove that they can.
I absolutely agree with that, and I think that extends to a woman's professional life and academic life. And I grew up in an academic family, and when I went and did my master's, one of the things that I couldn't quite wrap my head around was this idea of I felt like an imposter. And I spoke to my mother, who was a professor for 35 years in kinesiology, and she had that right up until her retirement and still does. And so it is this element of, like, we have to be better. We have to prove that we can do this. And even though women have been able to run the Boston Marathon for some time, this it, this didn't happen without women standing up and saying, we can do this. We've got Kathy Switzer, who, you know, ran, she was the first woman to run numbered in the Boston Marathon. And as I said in my response to the article, she didn't do this just because, like, she's like, I can prove that I can do this as an individual. She wanted to make a point that she could do this, and so could other women. And that was really important. And that came from a long-distance running coach's response to her wanting to run it, where he said that he felt that, you know, she was too fragile to do it. And, you know, if anyone said anything like that to me, you better believe that I'd go and do it and do it really, really well.
I do find it interesting, by the way, that that once upon a time, it was specifically the fact that women gave birth to children and had that responsibility and that biology that was used as the reason to not let them run, that it was supposedly dangerous for women to run. It might harm their chances of conceiving and giving birth to children. And now it's more often cited as a reason why women are tough. And I'm not sure what that means exactly, but I find it interesting that that's changed.
Yeah, and I think that part of the reason that it's changed is that, you know, being a mother is not the be-all and end-all for every woman. We can do other things, and it doesn't need to define us. And I think those things need to be talked about. But it is important to talk about those kind of biological aspects that women face in sports that men don't. So with the Divas Speaker Series that's coming up starting in March, we want to explore those kinds of obstacles. So, you know, you never know that a woman is on her period on race day, but she probably, you know, some of them probably are, or they're, you know, they're going through fertility treatments, or they're going through, you know, hormone transition. And those are the kind of things that I want to bring into the running space so that we can normalize these discussions. Because again, like it's not just the one person that's trying to achieve this. Again, if we can do this as a collective, you know, and normalize it in the running community, I just think it makes us stronger. It doesn't mean that we need a pass. It just means that we want to talk about it and we want to, you know, work with other women to find out their strategies. And again, this just goes back to the tribalism aspect of it. Like, we do have to stick together. Things are not as equal as they should be. And, you know, I think that there's a really, really healthy way to confront these ideas.
Right on. So the Divas Running Series is putting on a series of speeches, and you're going to cover what kind of topics?
Yeah, so this is going to happen in Toronto. We're hoping to get one started in Calgary. It starts in March, and our first panel series will be on transgendered athletes in the running space and in the sporting sphere. So we want to talk to you. This seems to be a topic where everyone seems to have an opinion on how trans athletes should be, you know, how they should be categorized. And I think it's really important to put the people that are actually affected by this in the spotlight. So, you know, people will just say put them in a transgender category, which does not work. And for many reasons, and we're going to explore why that doesn't work. And we're going to explore that with athletes that have transitioned to women, and what they need from us. And how we can be better allies, and how we can include people that are non-binary or gender fluid. And these are important things.
Right.
So that'll be one part of it. We are going to talk about the generations of runners that have come before us and the ones that are going to lead us into the future. So we have Jacqueline Guerreau, who came first in the Boston Marathon in 1980, but she had a bit of a mishap, came second at first because a woman did cheat, jumped on the subway.
Very famous story, yeah.
Yes, jumped on the subway and, you know, had that whole crowning achievement. And no one really knows Jacqueline's name. Everyone knows Rosie Ruiz's name, but we want to talk about those women push forward for women.
Yeah. All right. Well, we look forward to that. And in fact, we're hoping to have Jacqueline Guerreau on the show in the coming weeks. So that's great. So
that's
Lindsay,
wonderful.
This is really, really thought-provoking and powerful stuff. I'm so glad you wrote what you did at irun.ca. People can check it out there. Thank you for joining us on the show.
Thank you. And I will just say one thing. Divas in Toronto is on June 9th, and our Calgary Running Series is on June 23rd, and registration is open. And we'd love to see everyone out there, man, woman, whoever. Come
right
out and run with us. It's going to be a lot of fun.
All right. Thank you, Lindsay.
Thanks, Mark.
That's Lindsay Van Gene, who's a runner from Toronto and part of the team that puts on the Divas Running Series. I hope you can join us next week on iRun Radio. Thank you for listening. Have a great week.